It is another Wednesday night. That means it is your AEW Dynamite review. I am the Sala Monster, and it is Wednesday, March 27, 2024, the final Dynamite for the month of March. Thank you so much for joining me. We had one hell of a main event tonight on this Dynamite show. They're still up north in Canada. And tonight, we were going to crown a number one contender for Samoa Joe at Dynasty next month between Swerve Strickland and Konosuke Takeshita. I was very excited when they first announced this match last week. I was excited when they announced this match and Will Ospreay against Katsuyori Shibata. And they sandwiched the rest of the show in between those two matches. Opened with one, closed with the other. And I will tell you this, you know, having watched that main event, those two had a match tonight worthy of deciding who should go on to challenge Samoa Joe for the AEW World title. Two men who are both going to be future world champions in this company. But only one man can right now. And that man should be Swerve Strickland. Swerve Strickland wins tonight. That means next week he will sign the contract to make it official. And he will be challenging Samoa Joe for the world title at Dynasty coming up next month. This company, I said it on Twitter, this company is in very good hands. When you look at Takeshita, Swerve, Ospreay, just those three, not even mentioning anybody else, this company is in very good hands, at least in terms of in-ring, going forward with those three men. And that is not the only number one contender that was crowned on the show tonight. We had a four-way to decide who would face Julia Hart next month for the TBS title. It was Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, Sky Blue, and Anna Jay. And we now know who that woman is going to be. Mercedes was on the show tonight at ringside to watch. We still don't know who her first opponent is going to be or when. One thing also on the show tonight that they did, they forwarded things in the tag team title tournament because we have no AEW World Tag Team Champions right now. So we had two quarterfinal matches on the show tonight. And also, one thing that I liked that they did tonight was their use of videos. We had videos for Bryan Danielson, who was not on the show, but we had a video for him to, you know, get people hyped up for his match coming up with Ospreay next month. We had videos for Swerve, and we had videos for Takeshita to help build up to the main event tonight, which I liked. No in-ring promos. This was not one of those weeks where you have Tony Schiavone getting into the ring and you know, introducing us to a guest, and we have a whole promo segment in the ring. Anything like that they kept backstage. So it was pretty much a show that had to rely on the in-ring action. This was carried by the in-ring. The energy on the show was lacking from what it's been over the last few weeks. And I do wonder if the fact that they were running a half-empty building tonight probably had a lot to do with that. So the energy wasn't quite what it's been over the last few weeks. But like I said, the in-ring carried this show. They progressed their necessary stories going into Dynasty. And that's really all I ask for. You know, get me hyped up and get me interested in the pay-per-view. And give me some matches that are going to make me go, wow, you know, I'm glad I sat through that. You know, there were, you know, the tournament matches tonight were good. I would say missable, but good. But the rest of the stuff I thought, especially that main event, I cannot say enough good things about that main event tonight. And the key for them is going to be consistency. The shows have been more focused over the past month. And there has been a different vibe around them. I think a lot of it has to do with the new talent that they brought in with Mercedes and Ospreay and Okada. They have added a certain energy to the show that wasn't there before. But the key for them going forward is going to be just deliver shows that are consistently good, both in the ring and also in terms of the stories and in terms of the promo segments. And I thought tonight did a very good job of that. Again, the energy was a little off, but I thought overall it was a strong show. But again, this is your Dynamite review. Hit that like button and subscribe if you are not already subscribed. I sure would like to have you stick around. 400 likes is the goal tonight for Be the Booker. Super chats are open. We have a very busy week coming up last week, next week. Not last week. We had a busy week last week. We have a busier week next week. And I will tell you more about that on the podcast this weekend. Right now we're focusing on AEW. And we're focusing on the opening match, which was Will Ospreay one-on-one with Katsuyori Shibata. This felt more like a match that we would ordinarily see on Collision especially because the last time we saw Shibata, it was against Brian Danielson, and that was on Collision. But we had it here on the show tonight. I'm glad we did. And you know what? It's fun to see how into Ospreay's entrance the crowd has been consistently since he came in full-time. These people go wild for him. Actually, they went wild for him when he came out. And again, they didn't go wild for a whole lot on the show tonight. This crowd was, again, very quiet for large parts of the show, but they were not quiet for Will Ospreay. So that's a good sign. Fans have been into him so far. Excalibur narrated over some footage from their previous meeting, which was back in 2017 in New Japan. So this is when Ospreay was still a junior heavyweight, still working his way up. Shibata won that match, and he dominated on the mat. They said he was looking to do the same tonight. So both men traded some groundwork early until Ospreay dodged a PK. Ospreay exploded out of the corner with a shotgun dropkick, and he hit a stalling corner dropkick, which of course is right out of Shibata's playbook, and so he went to the floor. But he got met with a slingshot dive. Both men traded strikes until Shibata flattened Ospreay with a suplex on the floor. So we go to break. And we come back from break. Ospreay got caught on a dive attempt, booted into the barricade. Shibata tried another whip. Ospreay leapt over the barricade and then jumped off of it with a forearm. Back inside, the Kawada kicks by Ospreay got no-sold by Shibata, which would be a pattern here in this match. Seemed like they only woke him up. And then he dropped Ospreay with one shot. That's all it took. Shibata hit the stalling dropkick in the corner. Ospreay came back. He tried his handspring Pele kick, but Shibata countered into an STF. He caught his leg as he was coming off the ropes. Put him in the STF. Ospreay was able to make the ropes. And then Shibata just collapsed him with shots. But Ospreay, he kicked right back up. Almost in one fluid motion, he kipped up, hit an enziguri, and then he was down. Both men were down, but the crowd reacted big to that because it came out of nowhere. Shibata ducked the hidden blade, hit a sleeper suplex before a rear naked choke, saw Ospreay begin to fade, but he did get the arm up at two. Shibata got hung up in the ropes. Ospreay connected on an os cutter, but Shibata kicked out at one. Ospreay hooked the arms, and I held my breath. As soon as I saw him going to hook the arms here of this man, I wanted to look away. And what followed here was the Storm Driver 93, we were told. I can't get my numbers right. 1 week it's the Tiger Driver 91, the Storm Driver 93. I don't have all my numbers straight. But it was the Storm Driver. I think it's ridiculous to use that move on somebody who had a brain injury in the past. Thankfully, Shibata tucked his head on the way down, and it looked okay. But, boy, you are really tempting fate. Yeah, because I see him hook the arms like that, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going for the Tiger Driver like he did to Kenny Omega. That's the last thing you need to be doing with Shibata. I wouldn't even take the chance. But in the end, Ospreay hit the hidden blade for the win, and after the match was over, Ospreay, he bowed to Shibata. Shibata hugged him in return, paid his respect. I could have done without. Now, this is my one real criticism of this match. I could have done without a lot of the no-selling of the elbows and the forearms, especially from Shibata. And I know it's a Shibata thing. He does that in a lot of his matches, but it seemed a little excessive here in this match. But outside of that, very good match. Basically, the story here, Ospreay showing Danielson that anybody you can beat, I can beat. Anything you can do, I can do. That was the story here. And as good as this was, imagine how good the match will be at Dynasty. If this match didn't get you hyped up for that, then the next video package did, because they had a Bryan Danielson video package, and it was narrated by Excalibur. Tons of archival footage from his old days in Ring of Honor. And they talked about the fact that, you know, he broke into the business under the tutelage of Shawn Michaels and made a name for himself on the independent circuit before landing in ROH. And it talked about his career several years ago being ripped away from him due to injury. He was forced into retirement, told he would never wrestle again. Then he comes back, ends up in AEW in 2021. shows why he is an all-time great. And then we had footage, recent footage, of Danielson talking about how if this is his last year, because he's talked about this, this is supposed to be his last full-time year in the wrestling business. Going forward, he wants to have a handful of matches every year, pick and choose where and when and who he works with. But this is, for all intents and purposes, the retirement year for Bryan Danielson as we know it. And so in this footage from recently, he said that he is calling his shots and this is going to be the most epic year of his career. And I will tell you that I believe that he is absolutely calling his shots since the beginning of the year. Look at the year that this man has had so far. All right, we're only in March. And you look at the year that Bryan Danielson has had so far, going back to the Tokyo Dome at the very beginning of the year. He goes to Wrestle Kingdom. I know he's been wanting to do this for years. And, you know, the pandemic and everything, and it was like, man, is this guy ever going to have the chance to fly to Japan in front of people at the Tokyo Dome and have a big Wrestle Kingdom match? He got it this year. He wrestled Okada at the Tokyo Dome. That was a rematch from Forbidden Door. Then he went to Japan. He had the rematch with Zack Sabre Jr. And then you look at a lot of the matches that he's had on Collision. Yeah, you look at the TV matches, not even pay-per-view matches, that this guy has had this year. Yuji Nagata. Jun Akiyama. I mean, he was on television against Echicero from CMLL. Katsuyori Shibata. He's wrestling Will Ospreay next month, right? I mean, it's clear, and he's going to be actually at Arena Mexico. I think, is it this weekend? He's going to be with the Blackpool Combat Club, I believe, at Arena Mexico. But you look at this, and you can absolutely believe that he's calling his shots. Because in his mind, this is it. And if I'm going out full-time, I want to go out working against people that I want to work with. Or people that I've never had the chance to work with before. I want to go to the Tokyo Dome. I want to go to Arena Mexico. You know, he'll have a match, hopefully, barring injury, this year at Wembley Stadium. I still say it'll be against Nigel McGuinness, but we'll see. So if that doesn't get you hyped up for that match next month, I don't know what will. You know, you got two of the best in the world. You put them in the ring together and you let them do their thing. It's very simple. It's kind of hard to fuck up. You know, if you've got a Bryan Danielson-Will Ospreay match, pretty hard to screw that up. You just put them in the ring, ding, ding, ding. They'll take care of the rest. I'm very much looking forward to that match. Renee was backstage with the EVPs, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. She brought up the fact that tonight they are wrestling Private Party, who beat them in the first round of the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament 5 years ago. They got a first round win over the Bucks. So Nick got hot at Renee for even bringing that up. He said that she was being very unprofessional. He wanted Alex Marvez to conduct the interview. Matt calmed him down, said that, look, since we came back, we have had a few objectives. One of those being retiring Sting's old ass, and we did that. Another was restructuring the Elite, and they did that by adding Kazuchika Okada, who won the Continental title, they said, fair and square, all by himself last week. Just like they're going to win their match tonight in the tournament against Private Party so they can get their AEW tag team titles back. After this segment, we got footage from the back of the red Ferrari. It was back. Okada driving this red Ferrari around. He's enjoying his stay here since joining AEW. So he comes out of the red Ferrari, has his new Continental title with him, slings it over his shoulder, and makes his way into the building like the star that he is. If you want to portray somebody as a star, I mean, look, to these fans who know him, you know, a lot of the AEW fans know who he is. They're probably New Japan fans, so you don't have to tell them twice who Okada is. But you want this guy to come off as a star, this is the sort of thing you do. They got a belt on him right away. I mean, before you could even say boo, they put a belt on Okada, right? So he's got a championship now. He's going to keep it warm until Kenny Omega gets well. He shows up every week in his suit. He's showing up in a red Ferrari. You want people to see you as a star? You got to be treated like one. So far, so good with Okada. Now we had the Young Bucks taking on Private Party. This was a quarterfinal match in the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament. It's funny because they talked about them wrestling in the tournament 5 years ago on Dynamite and Private Party getting a win over them. I had the opportunity to help call their final independent match before the Bucks won full-time with AEW. And their final independent match was in House of Glory against Private Party. So Zay shrugged off a fist bump from Matt, getting a quick series of near falls, until Matt ran through him with a back elbow. Mark Quinn made a blind tag. He and Zay hit stereo backflips into super kicks that led to a double tope from both men. Matt recovered, though. He tried to send both of them over the barricade. It led to a silly string by Zay. Nick and Quinn, they both fought standing on the barricade until Nick connected with a Falcon Arrow off the barricade, which got a nice reaction from the crowd. They cut to Okada watching backstage. He was nodding in approval. And the Bucks maintained control throughout the picture-in-picture break. Okada won that car off of Otani in a dice game. His gambling is out of control. Yeah, I saw that press conference the other day. I don't know if I buy that. Look, if I'm Major League Baseball, I would do my very damnedest to cover up for my biggest star if I thought that he was doing something he shouldn't be doing. But in any event, that's just my little conspiracy theory. So Zay missed a twist of fate, and the Bucks connected on an avalanche slice bread powerbomb combo for two. Mark Quinn broke it up. Quinn then pulled his partner over to his corner to make the tag. Nick, though, dropped him with a German suplex on the apron. A lot of apron moves tonight. There were at least three or four times they did big moves on the apron on this show. So the Bucks signaled for the Tony Khan driver, as they are now calling it, but Zay held on to Nick and Quinn rolled up Matt for a very close two count, which Excalibur said was a callback to how they won their first match against each other. So the more bang for your buck attempt missed, Gin and Juice did not. That connected. And Private Party followed up with more bang for your buck. They did that themselves. Nick, though, broke up the count. So now Nick is very frustrated. And Nick Jackson goes and he grabs the ring bell. And Rick Knox, of course, the referee of choice for every Bucks match, see no evil, hear no evil. So Rick Knox grabs the bell away from him. And he goes to deposit it outside the ring. With his back turned, we see Matt kick Zay right in the balls. But Mark Quinn flies in the ring. He hits Nick in the head very carefully with one of the tag team title belts. They have this, the belts are vacant, so the belts are sitting outside the ring on a podium, like they were doing for the Continental title that entire month. Every week on TV, the belt was under a cloth. We didn't know what it looked like. But it was just sitting there in the aisleway every week. So that's where the tag belts are. He grabbed one of them and hit Matt very, very gently in the head with it. Nick put his brother's foot on the bottom rope, though, to break up the cover that followed. Quinn tried a 630, but he crashed and he burned. And boy, did he crash and burn on this 630 attempt. You know, the margin for error on a move like that is so small. So that allowed the Bucks to finish him off with the EVP trigger. And unfortunately, you know, when you build a match like this, or any match, you build to the finish, right? You want the finish to at least go off the way that it's supposed to, even if you mess something up earlier in the match, right? People remember the finish. Well, unfortunately, this time, the match itself was fine, but when they got to the finish, that didn't go exactly the way they had planned. So they went for the EVP trigger. I don't know how, but Nick slipped in mid-move. One of his feet just slipped. And so Matt connected on his knee strike, and Nick, after he was able to, after his stumble, he was able to regroup, and then he threw a weak-looking knee to finish off the move. It looked like shit, but that was the finish, and so they covered him, and they got the three counts. So yes, the finish looked terrible. It got chance of you fucked up from the crowd, but I thought the action before the botch finish was good. I like the callback to their previous match. You know, just trying to make people think that Lightning might strike twice, but, you know, still no surprise to see the Bucks move on. The Bucks are at least going to the finals. I think the minute you looked at the bracket, you had to know that the Bucks, if they weren't winning the entire thing, were at the very least going to go to the finals of this tournament. I mean, they're, you know, power hungry and EVPs. I mean, how are you going to have two guys walking around like that, basically, you know, everyone's boss, and they're going to get bounced in the quarterfinals, like even the semifinals next week? Like, yeah, no, I don't think so. So that's not really a surprise. But they would face the winner of the match coming up later in the show between the Undisputed Kingdom and Best Friends, which we'll get to in a few minutes. Renee was backstage with Chris Jericho and Hook. Now, remember last week, Jericho lost to Hook, and Jericho said that he was very impressed by Hook and that he had a proposition for him on the show this week, but he didn't say what it was. So Jericho here said that he was proud of Hook. He was really putting him over strong, said that you really showed me something I wasn't expecting. He said Hook's skills at this young age are so finely tuned, but they're still raw. So if he wants Jericho's advice to help him sharpen those skills, he's here for him. I'm here for you. And Hook said he appreciates the praise, and of course he would take advice from Chris Jericho. He's Chris Jericho. But he is Chris Jericho. He knows who he is, and then he got up in Jericho's face. You could hear, there were some fans, at least, in the crowd giggling at this when he said that line. And Jericho said he knows who Hook is, but more importantly, he knows who he can be. And he put his fist out, Hook gave him a fist bump, and that was the end of that. I have some advice for Hook. I mean, I'm no Chris Jericho. I don't have the experience that Jericho has. I haven't been doing this for 30 years like Jericho has, but I have some advice for Hook. Stay far away from Chris Jericho. That would be my unsolicited advice to Hook. This segment was very lame, so we will move on. Mercedes Moné was shown before the break, arriving in a black SUV at the building, and then they put the graphic up that said, up next is the four-way, to crown a number one contender for the TBS title. And I said, boy, it's a good thing she got to the building just in time. So she strolls on into the building, and they gave her an entrance, and she moseyed on down to the ring, and she took a seat at the announce desk. It was a four-way involving Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, Sky Blue, and Anna Jay. And they started with a series of quick pin attempts. We got a stare down between Willow after she ended up outside the ring. Stare down between Willow and Mercedes. Just brief, but they were eyeballing each other. Foreshadowing. Then we go to commercial break. After the break, Statlander wanted a 450 splash. Anna Jay cut her off with a superplex instead. Willow ran in and sandwiched both women with a senton. Sky Blue almost got planted with a doctor bomb, but she rolled through for a two count. Code Blue connected, but Statlander broke the count, hit a powerbomb backbreaker. Anna delivered a gory bomb on Statlander onto Sky Blue, but only got a two count out of it. Statlander avoided the Queen Slayer sleeper hold and sent Anna into a shotgun dropkick by Willow, which left Statlander and Willow, the two friends, to face off in the ring, but Sky Blue put a stop to it. She hung up Willow in the ropes and wanted a suplex, but Willow instead hit a Death Valley driver on the apron. Another apron maneuver on this show. Anna rolled through a Wednesday Night Fever attempt by Statlander and sent her packing. But here comes Willow from behind, and she scoops up Anna for the doctor bomb and secures the win and her spot as the number one contender for the TBS championship. Speaking of the TBS champion, Julia Hart, immediately, as soon as the match is over, she appears in the ring, lays out Willow with a belt shot, and then she looks over at Mercedes, stares down at her, holds up the title. Mercedes stood up. She walked over. She did not get into the ring. So they just stared at each other. Mercedes stayed outside. So Willow is going to get her shot, it is official, at Julia Hart and the TBS title at Dynasty coming up next month. And during the match at one point, they asked Mercedes on commentary who she would like to wrestle in her debut. And she had something to say about all the women except Willow. Didn't mention Willow. Now, with Willow's win here, I think things, in my mind, seem pretty obvious the way they're probably going to play out. We're going to get Willow and Julia Hart on April 21st at Dynasty. Willow is going to win the TBS title. Willow is going to go on to Double or Nothing, which they made official, is coming back to Vegas. They're coming back to the MGM Grand Garden Arena, which they ran that building for the first one in 2019. I was at that show. And I believe every other Vegas Double or Nothing since things reopened, you know, after the pandemic hit, I believe have been at the T-Mobile Arena. So they're going to be back at MGM for Double or Nothing on Memorial Day weekend. That's Sunday. And I think that's where we get Willow and Mercedes for the TBS title. Now, if you're going to do that, of course, you can't just gift this woman a TBS title match. She'll have to wrestle before then, which brings me to Dynasty. So when is Mercedes actually going to get in the ring? She may not until the pay-per-view. And what I've been thinking, and I had mentioned that I thought the way things were shaping up at Dynasty, we would get Willow and Julia Hart, and then we would get Statlander against Mercedes. And I still feel that way. We have one match as official, but I think you got to get Mercedes in the ring. Look, if you're building to something with her and Willow, especially for the belt, you can't just throw her in there cold, right? She's got to win, and she's got to beat at least one big name in that division. Chris Statlander is a former TBS champion. She would be a big name to beat. So there it is. You do Mercedes and Statlander at Dynasty, and let that be her debut. She wins. Maybe she wins another match on TV, and she earns her spot across the ring from Willow, and you get those two in the ring together. I mean, ever since she signed with the company, I said that the opponent that makes sense for Mercedes is Willow, because they had an unresolved issue from last year, and it ties back into the injury that took away almost a year of this woman's career. You can build an entire story around that. You throw the TBS title in there, and I think what we're looking at here is a situation where, much like Okada, they're probably going to have a belt on Mercedes pretty quick. In fact, if I were a betting person, I would say that belt will be around her waist before we even hit summer, the way things are shaping up. So I think that's where things are headed with these women. Now, backstage, Renee was interviewing Dustin Rhodes. Dustin said everybody on the roster is very talented, and he's had bangers throughout his 5 years in the company. I will say no banger bigger than that first Double or Nothing at MGM against Cody. That has to still be up there as one of the top, I don't know, five or 10 top matches in the history of the company. So no Dustin Rhodes match. For all the good matches that he has had during his time in AEW, nothing has matched the quality and the emotion and the intensity of that and the bloodiness of that match with Cody at that first Double or Nothing. But he said at 55 years old, he is as passionate as he has ever been. The Butcher interrupted, and Dustin acted like he smelled, and the Butcher said, no, it's my mustache. My mustache has its own musk. So that's what it is. I sat next to an old lady on the subway once who had her own musk. Maybe she had a mustache. Wouldn't surprise me. I didn't look at her face, so who knows? She may have. These old ladies, you get to a certain age, they don't give a shit. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the musk from her mustache. So the Butcher challenged Dustin to a musk or a match on Rampage, and Dustin accepted, and I am sure that it's going to be a fine match, and I cannot wait to read about who won. Still weird, though. I have to say, I don't get to hear the Butcher speak. I know he's in a band and everything else. I'm not really familiar with his music, but the rare times that I see the Butcher and I hear him speak, it's just weird to me because his voice does not match his face. The face, the gimmick, it just doesn't match. It's just weird for me. We got a quick black and white video showing Turner Classic Movies host Ben Mankiewicz in studio with timeless Toni Storm. He congratulated her on being the AEW Women's World Champion and redefining the art of pro wrestling. Storm congratulated Ben on whatever it is that he does and tried to get him to say her tits out line, but he refused. That's the second time now he's refused to say that line. This poor guy. He's probably not even a wrestling fan, right? This is the second time now they've roped him into doing one of these segments. He's probably thinking again with this wrestling shit. It's like, I'm not saying the line. I'll do your little segment, but I'm not saying the line. I've got standards here. The Butcher needs a monocle, says Mr. Dynamite. Yes, he needs a monocle and a top hat and a cane. That's what he needs. In our other quarterfinal match in the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament, it was Orange Cassidy and Trent Barretta against Matt Taven and Mike Bennett of the Undisputed Kingdom. Cassidy very casually strolled over to Taven on the apron and decked him to kick things off. Taven immediately sent Cassidy into the ring steps, but got met with a dive by Trent Barretta. Bennett followed suit. He flew in with a dive of his own. And then finally, Orange Cassidy climbs up to the top rope. He puts his hands in his pockets. And he dives off the top, wipes out both heels. So then the Kingdom kicked out Barretta's leg out of his leg. And Bennett hit a pile driver on the apron to take us into picture in picture. So after the break, Barretta got the knees up on a Matt Taven lion salt. And that led to Cassidy getting the hot tag. Cassidy connected with a top rope crossbody on Taven. Bennett blocked the twisting DDT, though. But then Cassidy managed to hit a Stundog Millionaire, only to eat a charging knee by Taven. So back and forth between these two teams. Taven wanted the spike pile driver, but he got crotched by Trent. And the match broke down at that point. Barretta connected on a tornado DDT that followed by a spinning DDT by Orange Cassidy. Cassidy and Barretta, they wanted a hug, but Roderick Strong was there, and Roddy's outside the ring. What does he do? He decks Chuck Taylor, who was outside, in the corner of Best Friends. So he gets knocked down. Cassidy then wiped out Strong with a dive. Back inside, Taven tried the spike pile driver again, but again got crotched, this time by Chuck Taylor after he recovered. And Barretta got a jackknife on Bennett for the flash pin. Now, this seemed like the most likely outcome after the Bucks beat Private Party earlier in the show, because the Young Bucks and the Undisputed Kingdom, heel on heel, would have been weird. Would have been awkward. Probably would have been a good match, but not the right one. So the finish here seemed pretty obvious. The Bucks came out on stage when this was over for a stare down from afar. Before they turned right around, they didn't come down to the ring. They turned right back around. They walked over to their Cody elevator, which took them back down. The Cody Vader. Since Cody doesn't use it anymore, I guess he gifted it to the Bucks. Because they were too fucking lazy to walk through the tunnels. So the elevator took them back down. This is what the bracket currently looks like for the Tag Team Title Tournament. The winners will be crowned at Dynasty next month, but right now on the left side of your screen, the Young Bucks will meet Best Friends in the semifinals. And you see on the other side of the bracket, Ricky Starks and Big Bill are going to be taking on Top Flight. FTR takes on the Infantry, who've got an upset win, to say the least, an upset win over the House of Black. I guess they wanted to have their upset here in this tournament, so that was it. So, this is the way things are shaping up. You know, as I look at this bracket here, should be the Bucks winning and going to the finals at the very least. I would think it's a given that they're in the finals against FTR or Top Flight. And I'm guessing it's FTR. You already had your big shock in the tournament by having the Infantry go over, unless they're going to be the feel-good story of this tournament. And I don't see them winning the entire thing. Then it probably, even though we've seen it a bunch of times, probably should be the Young Bucks and FTR in the finals. My guess is that the Bucks are going to win the belts. Part of their gimmick, they're throwing their weight around. They wanted to give Sting the big send-off at Revolution. That's the only reason the Bucks didn't get the belts then, but I think this time it probably is going to be the Bucks walking away with the belts. And by the way, I should mention this about this match. No Wardlow out there with the Kingdom. Even after Adam Cole told Wardlow, that loser who had one job, which was to win the world title and give it to him, couldn't even do that. Lost to Samoa Joe. Squandered the one title opportunity that he had by winning the Scramble match of Revolution. This fucking loser, his new job now, if you remember last week, Cole said, is to just make sure that Roddy doesn't lose his belt and make sure Taven and Bennett don't lose theirs. So tonight, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles were not on the line. But you would think these guys are at a tournament. And the winners of the tournament will win the AEW World Tag Team titles, and then you can bring the AEW titles with the Ring of Honor titles into the Undisputed Kingdom. You would think that that would carry some weight. You would think that would be important to Adam Cole. Evidently not, because Wardlow is nowhere to be found. Wardlow is probably at the bar. He's probably that guy at the end of the bar. He's been sitting there all week. He's all disheveled. He hasn't showered in 12 days. His hair's all fucking mussed up. And he's just pounding drinks one right after the other, thinking, what do I have to do? Where do I go from here? That could be his new gimmick. That could be Wardlow's new gimmick. Can't be any worse than what they have him doing now, which is a whole lot of nothing. All I know is this. I said this 2 weeks ago. They made sense of it when he was with MJF, and he was still with the Pinnacle. Why he was sticking around, why he wasn't just ripping this man's throat out, right? You can't. Contractually, you can't. So, in this situation here, it's like, well, is Adam Cole paying this man? Is he that hard up for money? Because if Cole is paying him, all right, well, you're going to do what I tell you to do because I'm paying you good coin, right? But if he's not, what is stopping Wardlow from beating the crap out of these men and walking out on them? Maybe he already has. Maybe that's why he wasn't there this week. Maybe he already walked away. Maybe I shouldn't invest so much time in thinking about Wardlow and his storyline since Tony Khan doesn't really do it himself. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. What I wouldn't give for an extra hour in my day. It would be an extra hour to get some work done, to get some sleep, or get some work done while I sleep. All right, so I guess that doesn't work that way. A lot of us wish that we had more time in our lives, but we don't. So how do you make use of that time that you do have? You need to know what's most important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you figure out what matters most to you so you can do more of it. Therapy can be helpful to you in a whole lot of different ways. It can teach you important coping skills. It can help you overcome certain insecurities that you may have about yourself. It can help you better understand your own feelings. And that's just a few. Therapy is not just for people who may have experienced a trauma of some sort in their lives, but it can help you there too if you have been through anything like that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's all online. It's designed to be convenient and fit into your schedule, regardless of how busy you may be. All you need to do to get started is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And even better, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. See, I told you it was convenient. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Renee was backstage with Kyle O'Reilly and congratulated him on his win over Brian Keith on Collision a few weeks ago. Kyle said that it felt good to pull that Band-Aid off after such a long time gone. Again, he missed 2 years. You know, 2 years of the man's career that he missed. And then Renee said, well, I wonder, you know, you mentioned that you weren't really interested in joining the Undisputed Kingdom, and I was just wondering if you were having second thoughts on going it alone. And Kyle said, no, I feel the same way. He said, I did it on my own against Brian Keith, and I'm going to do it on my own again on Collision this coming Saturday. And I sat here and I was watching this segment and I was trying to hold in the laughter because as good as Renee is at what she does, why would he want to join the Undisputed Job Squad? Look at what the Undisputed Kingdom has done so far. And her question is, have you had second thoughts about going it alone and maybe linking up with the Undisputed Kingdom? Fucking kidding me? What has this man seen to make him have second thoughts about his decision? That's the best decision he could have made. Oh, you know what, Renee? I was thinking about it, and these guys are on such a roll. Yeah, I think I will. I think I will take them up on their offer. Boy, I want to be a part of that. You fucking break. Has she watched the shows lately? Did she watch the show tonight? What is she doing when she's in the back? The main event was Swerve Strickland against Konosuke Takeshita, with the winner to challenge Samoa Joe at Dynasty for the AEW World Championship, even though Will Ospreay beat Takeshita at Revolution, but here we are. So we had a handshake to start things, but neither man would let go, and Swerve just stepped over into a headlock. Takeshita tried a whip to the ropes. Strickland, though, flipped out of it and applied a short arm scissors. Takeshita fired off a Takeshita line, and then Strickland responded with an uppercut off the middle rope to the back. Both men slugged it out before Swerve delivered a nice backbreaker. Quick counter, though, into a brainbuster put Takeshita back in control. And Takeshita refused to allow the referee to give Strickland a chance to recover, and he was firing off more forearms. And Swerve started clutching his neck. So Strickland tried a snap German. Takeshita no-sold it, and he sent Strickland outside with a wicked forearm shot. That took us into the commercial break. Takeshita worked over the neck and the arm area during the break. Swerve tried for a combination of different strikes, but his neck gave out on him. And Takeshita hit a home run forearm shot that just crumbled Swerve to the mat. Takeshita blocked a rolling flatliner attempt into a fireman's carry facebuster, and then a charging knee, and then a somersault dive out to the floor. Back inside, he wanted the corner brainbuster that he nearly killed Will Ospreay with at Revolution. Thankfully, he didn't get it, though. Swerve fought out of it. He trapped Takeshita in the corner and hit a hanging DDT, and the sky twister press connected, but Takeshita kicked out. Takeshita nailed a poison rana into a blue thunderbomb. I love me a good blue thunderbomb. Only got a near fall out of it, though. I will say, though, nothing will top the poison rana that Ricochet hit on JD McDonagh on Monday night. That was a thing of beauty. Takeshita took too long to capitalize, though. That allowed Swerve to fire off a straight right hand. He tried the rolling flatliner again. This time, Takeshita hit a pump knee in midair. Strickland eventually did hit the rolling flatliner. See, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And Takeshita sold it like death. He sold it right on top of his head. He sold this thing great. Swerve connected on a swerve stomp on the apron. Another apron move. How many is that? Four? In this one episode? Back inside, he tried for another stomp off the top. Takeshita, though, countered into a powerbomb. Caught him on the way down, slammed him down. Then we got this crazy series of counters that led to Takeshita avoiding the JML driver into the wheelbarrow German and the power drive knee. Swerve barely got a shoulder up. Takeshita wanted an avalanche blue thunderbomb, but Strickland fought out of it. He delivered the house call kick, and then he went up, and he hit the swerve stomp, and he covered Takeshita, and he kicked out of the swerve stomp, and Swerve could not believe it. Swerve followed with a standing swerve stomp. And then finally, the JML driver, big pressure, wins it for Swerve. This was one hell of a fucking main event on this show, is all I have to say about this. Actually, I have more to say about this match, but this was a great main event, a great way to cap off the program. Two of the shining stars, the true shining stars on this AEW roster. You saw them in that main event here tonight. I am not thrilled about Takeshita dropping his last two big matches, first against Ospreay and now here against Swerve, but it's not his time. It's not his time right now. It's Swerve's time. And they showed Samoa Joe watching on in the back. He was visibly upset over the outcome. Renee walked up to him and asked him if he would like to join the Undisputed Kingdom, and he laughed in her face. That did not happen, but she walked up to him and said, look, after that match, Swerve should be a shoo-in as the number one contender for your title. And she asked, how would you feel about facing him one-on-one? And Joe said that next week when Swerve walks down to that ring and he signs on the dotted line, he's going to make sure he understands what he's asking for. He said, Swerve thinks he's ready. No, no, he's not that man. And that was the end of Dynamite tonight. We had a very good opener. We had an excellent main event. We had two solid tag team matches, a solid four-way as well, with Willow becoming number one contender for the TBS title. So the in-ring action, like I said at the beginning, is what really carried the show tonight. A noticeable downturn in the amount of talking, which is the opposite of what we had on Monday. But that's sort of the beauty of having these two competing products here, is that one show and the other show being completely different in the same week, they each bring different things. What works for one may not always work for the other. One does not have to be identical to the other. Here on this show, the only thing that was off about it was the crowd. That's what I mean when I talk about the energy of the show. Outside of that, though, very good show tonight. Good in-ring action, good build to the matches coming up at Dynasty. Consistency is key. They need to keep doing what they've been doing. And I know the numbers aren't necessarily reflecting it, but I think as far as my enjoyment level of the program week to week, over the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks or so especially, this show has been very, very good. And I want them to keep doing what they're doing. Hopefully as time goes on and they establish these newer names, Mercedes hasn't even wrestled a match yet. Okada is there now and Ospreay is there now, both full-time. Swerve, I think, is about to be elevated. The time is now. You know, I didn't feel that way at Revolution. Revolution felt too soon. I wanted Joe to have at least a little more time, but now I feel like, you know what? It feels. It's that feeling that you get. It's time. It's time to belt Swerve. And part of the reason I think it's important, frankly, to put the belt on Swerve right now is because I think Will Ospreay is going to get that belt at Wembley. I think we're going to probably get a main event of Swerve and Ospreay in London. And if that's the case, Swerve deserves a few months at least to rack up some wins, have some defenses, you know, before he drops it. If he drops it in August, it does not mean he will not win the belt back. I believe he will win the belt back. In 2025, he could be a two-time AEW World Champion. But I think that's where things are headed. If he doesn't get the belt now, you know, look, you miss your window. Plans change. Mike Santana, I'll give you an example. He just sat down, did a great interview with Chris Van Vliet. And Santana is officially a free agent. He's no longer under contract to AEW. He's our champion in House of Glory. He bet on himself. He wanted to branch out and start doing more single stuff. And he's doing that now. And he's, you know, a lot happier for it. It's a great interview, though. Talks about, you know, the situation between him and Ortiz and the rift between them. And, you know, some personal stuff that he shares as far as his own demons and stuff that's happened with his family. But in the interview, the reason I bring it up is he mentions at one point when Chris asked him, was there ever a point where you guys were supposed to win the tag team titles? Because it just seemed crazy to me that, you know, Proud and Powerful were never the AEW World Tag Team Champions. They never held the belts. And he said, yeah. There was a time where we were told by the Bucks pulled us aside and said, look, this is what we're going to do. You're going to beat, I think it might have been the Bucks, you're going to beat us, and then you're going to go on to wrestle whoever the champions were at the time, and you're going to get the belts. And then his father passed away. And he had to go home, obviously, right? You got to deal with that situation first. And so he was gone for a few weeks. By the time he came back, all the creative plans changed. And all of a sudden, they were not going to be the World Tag Team Champions. All that to say, in a heartbeat, just like that, plans change. Somebody else comes along, somebody else gets hot, you lose your spot, the momentum shifts somewhere else. And all of a sudden, everybody thought, hey, this guy's going to be champion. And now it's like, oh, no, this guy's going to be champion, right? It's timing. Timing is very important. Swerve is still over. The people want to see him, I think, succeed. They want to see him win that title. I don't think you can afford to wait until Double or Nothing or Forbidden Door. I think you got to pull the trigger at Dynasty, and I feel like they will. I think that's going to be his crowning moment. The collision lineup for this Saturday, Adam Copeland is the brand new TNT champion. He will be defending the TNT title in the Cope Open. So we're getting an open challenge, John Cena style, John Cena U.S. title style, where he's going to be defending it starting this weekend. Bryan Danielson, Claudio, and Katsuyori Shibata will be teaming up to take on Lance Archer and The Righteous. FTR takes on the Infantry in a tag team title tournament match. Ricky Starks and Big Bill, also in the tournament, take on Top Flight. And Kyle O'Reilly will be in action, still not joining the Undisputed Kingdom. I just can't get over that. And on Dynamite next week, the Bucks take on Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta in the semifinals of the AEW World Tag Team Tournament. Here's the Twitter poll. We got the thumbs up system back. The stars are gone. How would you rate Dynamite for tonight? 57.7% vote thumbs up. 22.2% vote thumbs down, or I'm sorry, thumbs in the middle. And almost 22%, 20% vote thumbs down for tonight's show. As always, you know where to go if you want to vote. At Solomonster is the place to be. Hey, Michael Cuomo, shout out to Michael. He gifted 5 channel memberships. Thank you very much, Michael. So it's a quiet night, it looks like, so we should be able to zip through these pretty good. And as far as Be the Booker is concerned, the goal was 400, but we're falling short. We're right around 320. So in these final minutes here, if you want Be the Booker, hit that thumbs up. Let's see where we are going to start here. Let's go through your messages, see what you guys have to say. We will begin here with our friend Arabian Knight. I hope you are having a good night. Says, brain dead that WWE released Swerve. He would be mixing it up with Rollins, Cody, Drew, and Styles right now. Imagine Swerve against Gunther. Also, where the hell is Roosh? Yeah, Roosh is a weird one because it's like a month ago, he tweeted that he was all healed up from the torn hamstring and he was ready to come back. And then there was nothing. So, I don't know. I don't really have a good update for you on what's going on with Roosh. Josh Carlos says, MJF against Will Ospreay, potentially AEW's biggest rivalry. Oh, you mean you don't think MJF and Adam Cole and the Undisputed Kingdom is his biggest rivalry? Really? I mean, you're not impressed by how things have been going for the Undisputed Kingdom? Honestly, MJF's injury is what kind of fucked him. Not his fault. But I do wonder if things would be a little more compelling if he was around, if they would be doing stuff that is more interesting. You know what, though? Actually, I take that back. It wouldn't matter. And the reason it really wouldn't matter all that much is because Adam Cole, everybody thought it was a ruse. Everyone thought, oh, it's all part of the work. No, he really fucked up his ankle badly. And we still have no idea when he is going to be healed and ready to come back. If he can't get physical, if he can't take bumps, he can't wrestle. Even if MJF came back tonight, honestly, it wouldn't make a difference. This storyline was cursed from the moment that Cole jumped off that ramp at Grand Slam. MJF getting hurt and needing time off was just the icing on the cake. It just didn't work out. WWE Gaming and Wrestling, what's your favorite John Cena run? I would say, you know what? It's funny. I mentioned the U.S. Title Open Challenge. If you would consider that a run, that would be one of my favorite John Cena runs. I actually thought that was a very good, I don't even know how long it went. A few months, very good few months, I guess, before he dropped the belt. So I may go with that. But honestly, his run when he was champion, I feel like at the end of 06 into 07, and he had those matches with Shawn Michaels and Umaga, that was one of his better runs too. And the only thing that ended that run, that title run, was him getting hurt. I think that's what did it. Prince Vegeta, thank you for the $4.99. What world championships in wrestling do you consider actual world championships? Like, would you consider TNA and Ring of Honor as real world titles? I mean, it depends what you mean when you say, you know, real world titles. I mean, to me, I think of the biggest titles in wrestling. I think of the WWE title. I think of the AEW title. I think of the IWGP title. I still look at the IWGP title as one of the most prestigious titles in all of wrestling, even though New Japan has sort of fell off a cliff recently. So, you know, you say real world titles. I'm just going by what I think are the biggest ones and the biggest promotions that would be the most sought after. And you look at the level of competition on the roster for them. And that's what I think of. I think of the WWE title, the AEW title, and the IWGP title. You can put them in whatever order you want to. I don't really think of the TNA title being in that top mix. The Ring of Honor title, no. So, yeah. Those would be the ones. NWA? No. No, that hasn't been the case for a very long time. You're thinking of the old NWA. Don't you realize ever since Tyrus held that title doesn't exist anymore? You're really going to put the NWA, you're going to type NWA in the chat after that Tyrus run? What's the matter with you? Bender McSimpson with the $4.99. Great opener and a great main event with a great women's match in the middle. A great match sandwich, if you will. That's one way of putting it. Bender also says, part of Hook's character is being the quiet badass, but it's hard to grow the character if he barely talks. How would you evolve Hook's character? Well, I think he does need to talk more. He's just not totally comfortable doing it because he hasn't had the chance to do it very often. And the only way for him to get more comfortable and to improve and get better at it and sound more natural would be for him to do longer promos. And that's just something that's going to come with time and experience. I wouldn't really change the character that he's playing right now. I think the silent badass who doesn't have to be totally silent is probably the way to go with him for now. I wouldn't make any sort of wholesale character changes. I think it's too early for that. But he does need to talk more. And in order for him to talk more, you have to give him something interesting to say. I don't know that there's a lot that's terribly interesting to talk about when it comes to him and Chris Jericho engaging here in some sort of... obviously it's going to end up being a feud. But talking more is the one thing that will allow him to get more comfortable doing it. Hopefully he'll get better. He'll get even better at it as time goes on. He has a certain authenticity to it. It's very laid back. But you're going to have to say more than a few words. That's going to get very old after a while. Arabian Knight. Can't wait for Britt and Jamie Hayter to return. A lot of hate on women's division, but they are missing the two biggest female stars they've built the most equity in. They have plenty of other women on the roster. You can't just say that, well, people shit on the women's division and, you know, the majority of the blame is because Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter are gone. Well, what does that say then about Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo, and now they have Mercedes, and they have Willow, and they have Statlander, and Julia Hart, and Sky Blue? I mean, come on. Thunder Rosa. I don't really buy that as an excuse. The division will be helped when people like Jamie Hayter are finally able to come back. But it all comes down to the booking and compelling stories. And if people are enjoying the women's stuff, then you can attribute that to the stories that they're telling. And if they don't, it all comes down to the stories. Plain and simple. Not having Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter might hurt, but by no means, I think, can you, you know, ascribe any issues you may have with this division not being any good or not being any interesting. Or, you know, you can't blame that on the fact that two people are missing when they have these other 10 women over here I mean, what are they? They don't exist? Come on. Uffman Entertainment. DeTony Khan. I owe you one, pal. Wardlow. I don't know what he said or what he promised or did not promise to Wardlow. All I know is that it would be in Wardlow's best interest the first chance he gets to try his hand somewhere else. It ain't working. Whatever they're doing with him right now, it ain't working. And unless he wants to waste more time, you only get older. The age only goes up from here. I'm him. I don't want to waste too much more of my time. I want to be somewhere where they'll actually have something for me to do where I could try to get over. Chris. Oh, this is a great name. Chris Faplander with the super chat. You were right. Run track like we run train. That is one of the more interesting names I've seen recently. Chris Faplander joining us tonight. Don't let Rumplemane know that you're here. The Winston Slip, buy or sell.
One, it's Samoa Bro.
Oh, it's Ray. I'll get to Ray in a second. First, we got buy or sell wrestlers in face paint or under masks. Face paint. As an old school wrestling fan from the 80s, I grew up on the Road Warriors and the Ultimate Warrior. Sting. Face paint. If I had to pick one over the other. Nick Grasso. What does Tony Storm do with Dynasty face Thunder Rosa one-on-one? Triple threat with Rosa and Perrazzo or the big dream match against Wendy Richter? I vote Wendy Richter. I don't know that Wendy wants to come out of retirement, though. But I'm guessing one-on-one with Thunder Rosa. And there's Ray. Ray Wrighton with the $20 super chat. Hey, Ray, thank you very much. Always good to hear from you. The fact that Chris Jericho and MJF contended for the tag team titles while having Santana and Ortiz, an actual team, in his own faction will always piss me off. But according to Jericho, he elevates the younger talent. My ass. Well, now he's going to elevate Hook. Now he has locked in on his new target. That's why I said, if I have one piece of advice for Hook, run the other way. Yeah, Jericho did point that out. He was very adamant on his podcast recently. I elevate younger talent. See, there's a difference, though, when you say put over and elevate. Those are two totally different things. Like, he lost to Action Andretti. And that established Andretti on TV. And would you say that he elevated it? Action Andretti? Would you say that he really, you know, put Action Andretti in a position where now he is in a meaningful role on the show? I wouldn't say that. So, when you think about it, how many of the younger talents on the AEW roster has Chris Jericho elevated? Like, truly, truly elevated? You got to put three names on a list. Who would those three names be? Can you come up with three? Barry MK, favorite RVD attire. Oh, I mean, he's had a lot of cool, you know, airbrush designs. I don't know that there's one. I like them all, honestly. I just like that whole airbrush design that he would have on his singlet, so I can't think of one specific one. I just thought his gear was always cool. Oz and Glorious, hit that like button. Great show and great stream, Solo Monster. Oz, thank you for the $5. Oz, always supporting. Thank you very much. Sammy. Mr. Fister says he elevated Sammy. Well, he gave Sammy Guevara an opportunity to be a part of his crew. And what Sammy would have been doing if he wasn't in the inner circle probably would not have been as prominent on the show as he was being a part of Jericho's crew. So I'll buy that. I'll buy Sammy. Sammy probably... Now, we can say a lot about Sammy, and, you know, as he serves out his suspension. But I think putting Sammy on the list is fair. We're not talking about the company. He said he elevated AEW as a whole since day one. Jericho was very important to the beginning of AEW. Nobody is denied. He was a big name. He was a known commodity coming over from WWE. He had been on their television for years and years. And he was a very important piece of the AEW crew at the very beginning when this company first started. And Tony Khan was, he benefited from having Chris Jericho on his roster. But as we sit here now, 5 years later, and Jericho is crowing and boasting about all the talents he's elevated, I think it's fair to ask, in terms of individual talents, who did he truly elevate? You know, there was a story there with Daniel Garcia and the Ring of Honor World title, and they didn't really finish that story in the way that I thought they should have. There was a way to finish that story where Garcia would have come out of it in a lot better of a position than he was. You could have said that Jericho, at the end of it all, he really did elevate Daniel Garcia. And then they did the swerve, and he didn't. So, I don't count him. Sammy, I'm willing to put on the list. You still haven't answered my question. Give me two or three more names. Since apparently this is what he's known for. I'd like to know who the other people are that you think he elevated. Boney says, whatever happened to the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame? They announced a few names years ago, but nothing since. They had four initial inductees, right? It was the Briscoes, I think Samoa Joe, Punk. Might have been Punk and Danielson. I don't remember who all the four were, but I don't know. I don't know. There's no set criteria for having one induction a year, so I mean they could pretty much have new inductions whenever they want to. MJF. Some people are saying that he elevated MJF. You see, I can't sit here and say that. I can't say that he elevated MJF and MJF ended up in the position he's in large part because Chris Jericho helped get him there. They worked together. They worked together. They did the whole dinner debonair and then they feuded and... But is that what elevated MJF? I mean, I think that's borderline. I don't know about that. MJF was well on his way. Yeah, Jericho was a good person for him to work with, it felt like. Did he help elevate him? I don't know. Oz and Gloria says, Juice Robinson equals the missing piece of AEW right now. Yeah, he had back surgery a few months ago, and I have not heard any updates on him since. The Winston Slip. 10-man tag, team mask versus team face paint. Who are you on? Team face paint. All the way. Chris Manson, did you see the Quiet on the Set docuseries? I have not. I've heard about it, but I have not seen it. Rumplemane, there he is. You rang. Yes, I did. See, Rumplemane is like Beetlejuice. Like, you don't really want to call him out, but sometimes you have to. And you do it against your better judgment, but you say his name three times, and then boom, there he is. There he is, and there's the foot. There's the foot emoji right there. I did see, by the way, I saw the new trailer for the new Beetlejuice movie. I'm very excited about this. I saw Michael Keaton in the trailer, and Winona Ryder. And they got some faces back from the original, except, obviously, Jeffrey Jones, who they killed off for obvious reasons. But I'm very excited about this Beetlejuice sequel. I think it's coming out in August. Prince Vegeta says the NWA Championship is a toy. It's like a trinket on a Christmas tree. Thank you, Hulk. And Oz and Gloria says 17 more likes. Let's go. Is that where we're at? Well, the goal tonight was 400. And we are at 388. So we are falling short here for Be the Booker, unfortunately. But thank you guys for the super chats. Appreciate it. Again, a quiet night. It's definitely been more lively on the WWE streams, but it is WrestleMania season. And The Rock is back. And CM Punk is back on TV dropping bombs, and people are losing their minds, so I guess that's just the way it is. The Winston slip. Oh, you said who you got. Can I pick my five? I don't know about five. But I'll pick, as far as face paint, I'll give you, I'd love to see Demolition and LOD on the same side. Get Demolition, LOD, and Sting. So those are your five on team face paint. As far as the mask, that's harder. I don't know. I'd have to think on that. See, the face paint was easy. Who would I want on my squad of masked men? Kane? Like, original Kane. I'm talking like 97 Kane or 2000 Kane, right? I'll put Kane on there. Gosh, who else? Who else would I put on there? I don't know. Maybe just Kane. We'll have 5-on-1. We'll have a handicap match. Oh, boy. All right. Who else we got here? Oz and Glorious, thank you for the two. Jupiter, what is your least favorite Halloween entry? Resurrection. The Busta Rhymes one. In case you don't know which one that is. That is the worst Halloween of all the movies. And there have been some Halloweens that I did not like. I did not like Part 6. I did not like the whole Thorn storyline that they introduced. 6 was the one with Paul Rudd before he started doing all those comedy films. Well, I wasn't really a big fan of the Rob Zombie ones. I didn't hate them, but not the biggest fan of those. And Halloween Kills, which was the second one from the recent reboot of those three that came out. Like, yeah. We won't talk about that. Well, I'm being told here that apparently we did hit the goal. And indeed, we did. How about that? We shot up to 420. 420! How about that? So we hit our goal tonight. Another buzzer beater here on the stream. So let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker!
So, Holding My Nuts in the chat, another great name here, says Ray, Vader, Liger, and Kane. Oh, of course, Vader. How could I forget Vader? You know, I was so focused on the face paint crew. I blanked out on all the masked men. Vader, Mankind. Mankind is my favorite of all the Foley gimmicks, so yeah, I go Mankind. Mr. America, yeah, we'll leave Mr. America out. Rey Mysterio, Rey's great. I don't know if I want him on my team, though, against LOD and Demolition. Maybe we'll leave Rey out of that. Vader, Kane, I'm down for Liger. Ooh, Mil Muertes, that's good. Yeah, Mil Muertes and Katrina, how about that? All right, let's do this here. Be the Booker time, tag teams. Holding My Nuts. Yes, that's his name. I'm not the one doing it, but that's his name. Mantar didn't have a mask. He had face paint, but he did not have a mask. He had a moose head. Whatever, I guess it wasn't a Minotaur. He had a Minotaur head. All right. We begin with, speaking of Rey Mysterio, and look at his little boy here. Look at this child. This was before he was corrupted by Rhea Ripley. Before the mullet, Dominic Mysterio, former SmackDown Tag Team Champions, Rey and Dominic Mysterio, are going to be taking on the Hart Foundation. Bret the Hitman Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Wow. Rey Mysterio in there with Bret Hart. Sign me up, man. Sign me up. I'd buy a ticket to see that. Women's be the booker. Start out with Maki Ito. It's Maki Ito. And look at this. Flipping the bird. Who is that? Is that Sheeta? Maki Ito. I haven't heard her name recently. Maki Ito going to go one-on-one with Maryse. Oh, be still my heart. Always had a thing for Maryse. Still do. Maryse and Maki Ito. I think Maki Ito could beat The Miz. That's what I think. You know, you could just skip Maryse and just put Miz in there, and I still think Maki Ito would kick his ass. And yes, that gets a bell from me. You don't like it? Tough shit. That's two bells so far. We're well on our way here. Here we go. Men's be the booker. Kota Ibushi. Makes me very sad, actually, to see this image here. This was peak Ibushi right here. He's got the IWGP title. He's got the IWGP Intercontinental title, which they never should have gotten rid of. This man looks like a comic book character, this man. And to see what he has become is very sad. But Kota Ibushi is a great, great half of this main event. And I am very, very interested to see who he is going to be stepping into the ring with. We put together some very interesting matches. And this time, we've got Ibushi one-on-one with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't care what anybody says. Kota Ibushi against Arnold Schwarzenegger is a match that would sell tickets. You can have that match on my show anytime. How's that for a main event? Arnold Schwarzenegger and Kota Ibushi. Look how happy he is, by the way. He's on SmackDown. This is in 99. Ibushi and Arnold. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like a DDT match. If Arnold wasn't so freaking old, and Ibushi wasn't so beat up, who knows? Maybe we could have gotten that match on a DDT show. But it was not meant to be. That's great. I like that. Low-key would watch that? Says keep like... No, not low-key. You would watch it. You don't have to say, I would low-key. No, you would watch it, and a lot of other people would watch it. You don't even have to say low-key. You don't have to put that qualifier in there. That's how you do a clean sweep. Uffman says, good job, everybody. We hit the goal. Yes, indeed. Applause for all of you. Uffman also says, if Rhea corrupted you, would you really complain? No, not at all. She can corrupt me anytime she wants to. I'm just saying. That was Dominic pre-corruption. She helped turn him into the man that he is today. G-Money with the $4.99. AEW used to do fun angles like the... Proud and Powerful Powerbomb, Ricky Morton, Cody and Jericho Concession Brawl. What happened? Angles make characters more interesting. Well, I don't know what you mean. You know, you mentioned the Cody and Jericho Concession Brawl. We just had an I Quit match with Copeland and Christian where they brawled out to the concourse and Christian tried to escape into the women's restroom. And all of the women went running, screaming out of the bathroom. And Copeland had to go in there to get him out. And they brawled all over the building. They had a hockey fight. They put hockey uniforms on and were beating the hell out of each other. So that was a pretty fun brawl. And they still do Stadium Stampede every year. So, I mean, they still do that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. But yeah, I mean, look, there have been some angles that they've done, over the years that were impactful. You can't do them all the time because then they kind of lose some of their effect. But, you know, as long as you have the right people for it, it's just a matter of coming up with the right idea, the right concept, the right injury angle, whatever it may be. But they still do a lot of that crazy stuff. Some people don't like it. Some people actually don't like AEW because they do a lot of crazy shit. But it's not like they ever stop doing it. Hey, Winston, thank you, man. Have a good night. Trill Mexican, Arnold versus Ibushi is the most Kota Ibushi match you can come up with. This fits him to the T. Have a good night, Solo. It really does, doesn't it? I said it's exactly the kind of match you would expect to see him on a DDT show. Well, thank you guys. This has been a fun night. I thought it was a fun episode of Dynamite tonight. And it's going to be hopefully a fun episode of SmackDown coming up on Friday. I don't know. What is the big thing that they've announced for SmackDown? We had the face-off with Roman and Cody last week. Rock is not announced for the show on Friday. So I don't know what the big thing is for SmackDown on Friday. But hopefully they can keep their momentum going into WrestleMania. I'll be here. I won't be here for SmackDown next Friday. I'll be in Philadelphia for House of Glory, but we will do SmackDown on Friday night and finish out this month. That's our final stream for the month of March. I want to finish big. G-Money says, I mean characters interacting outside of matches. Yeah, I mean, they could do a better job of doing that sort of thing. But, you know, you mentioned the concession brawl and stuff like that. I mean, again, that's one of the things that they sometimes go overboard, frankly, with. They do too much of that stuff. I feel like every week it's some kind of a hardcore street fight or weapons brawl or something. But, I think you want to have characters that are interesting, that are interacting with each other on the show. I think that, like, the Bucks gimmick that they're doing now, for example. Some people can't stand the Young Bucks, and they don't like them. And they don't like this new gimmick. Honestly, this is the most interesting to me that they've been in a very long time. I even remember the last time I was this interested in them. It fits them. Like, it's them. Like, their characters, right? It fits that character, what you would expect the Young Bucks to be. The just, like, smarmy, smug little douchebags. It fits them. They're embracing it. They're leaning into it because there's a segment of the fan base who already views them like that. So they're embracing it. It's smart. And now this stuff with Okada being brought into the Elite, I like him being added. When Kenny is able to come back, that should make things even more interesting with that whole Elite storyline. Because I had just grown completely tired of the Elite stuff. I didn't give a shit. You know, at least now they're doing something that I find to be interesting with it. As far as Swerve, you have somebody who's on the cusp of being elevated to top status in the company. Now you're bringing in new talents. You have Ospreay in, you have Mercedes in. Hopefully in the not-too-distant future, they'll get back people like Jamie Hayter. You have even someone like Pac, who vanished. He got hurt, he disappeared, now he's back. He wasn't on the show tonight, but yeah, he'll probably be wrestling Okada at Dynasty. Yeah, they've got to work on those stories with the women's division. They have a lot of work to do there as far as coming up with multiple different stories that are interesting and compelling as far as the women go. But I think in time, hopefully that will come. You know, we'll see if people talk about Mercedes and can she be the one that helps lift this women's division up to where Tony Khan, you know, he puts more focus and attention into it, or, you know, this writer from WWE that they brought in who's friendly with Mercedes, maybe, you know, with other people like her being brought in, that can help elevate the stories and the characters and the company. I hope so. But it takes time. But I hope so. I think you want that on your television show for sure. If you missed my Raw review on Monday, go check it out. That was a fun show on Monday night. We got into a lot of stuff that happened, especially that Punk promo on the show. And the Rock and Cody angle at the end. So go check out the Raw review if you missed it. And I will see you on Friday night. And we'll talk SmackDown. Until then, take care, guys.